life isn't over till it's over. And don't buy into the, ooh, now I'm old, because old connotes a destination. Growing older is just a process. And human development is something that can happen psychologically and spiritually until the day we die.
That was Stephanie Raffalock, and you're listening to episode 162 of the Building Psychological Strength podcast, where we uncover the information, tools, and techniques to turn our mind into our most valuable asset.
The courage to face fears with persistence.
Being able to be present enough in this moment to choose my response thoughtfully.
We have the strength to bend to life stressors, to bend to adversity without snapping, without breaking.
There are only 6 things that contribute to our quality of life, and they are all experiences.
In every moment, we are deciding who we want to be and how we want to live our lives.
Noticing what your brain is doing and then being able to make choices.
Mobilize the things that we know lift us up.
Fear is not logical. It's primal.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to the Building Psychological Strength podcast. My name is April Seifert, and I'm your host. If this is your first episode or one of your first episodes, I want to say thank you so much for trying us out and for giving us a listen. We absolutely appreciate it. And if you are returning, I want to say welcome back. I love having you here. I love hearing from you. And I absolutely love hearing the things that you are learning and taking away from the podcast. And on that note, I want to quickly highlight a review that we got on iTunes from DJ Rich B. Now think about this. If you have listened to our episodes in the past, you might recognize that name. Rich B. Where have we heard that before? This review is actually from a former guest of ours on episode number 158, Rich Bracken, but he was sweet enough to leave us a review that is titled Such a Transformational Podcast. He says, "This is one of those must-have podcasts that provides optimal advice to live our best lives through the input of some of the best guests and an amazing host." Now, there's a reason why I'm highlighting this particular review. Thank you, Rich. That was very sweet of you to leave that. There's a reason why I'm highlighting that review for this episode. Rich says something very relevant to what we're going to be talking about today. He said, "Optimal advice to live our best lives through the input of these guests." This week, we are going to be speaking with someone who can help us do just that, but she is coming at it from the lens of living your life to the fullest until the absolute end of it. So this week in this episode, we are going to be speaking with Stephanie Raffalock. She is the author of the upcoming book, A Delightful Little Book on Aging. So we're going to be talking about the aging process this week. It is such an interesting thing to be, I'm just going to speak from my own perspective as a woman who just turned 40 in the United States, 2 kids, working, all of those things. It is a very hectic time of life, but it's also a very transitional time of life. As I turned 40, I noticed that I got a number of different responses from people. So they ranged anywhere from people who just gave me the traditional happy birthday. Oh, wow. What are you doing for your birthday? To, ooh, 40. And those responses made me really aware of the fact that aging means something in particular for women in our society. And we're going to dive into a lot of that in this episode. You know, as much as times are changing, as much as, you know, women are really coming into their own in our society, there are still things that in our unique experience, we experience more so than other people. And I don't want to say that, you know, men don't experience, you know, the pressures and transition that comes with aging. They definitely do. But there is just a unique experience around women. And we get into a lot of that in this episode. In particular, we talk about some pieces around relevance, remaining relevant and making a significant contribution throughout your life. We also talk about where we put our value as a person, where we find that value, and how that might shift throughout our lives. We also have this really great conversation about some of the difficult emotions that can come up as you transition to the point where you might have less time left than you have lived already. These are some pretty heavy topics that we're going to be talking about today. We're going to talk a lot about the shoulds that come with aging, especially for a woman. Should you be wearing, doing that, or shouldn't you? Can't a woman of your age be doing that? So many of those expectations that we perceive out there, and lots of times are very real because we hear from people about these expectations. We're going to be talking about those. Side note, there's a very big relation between those expectations, that perceived pressure, and some of the things we talked about in episodes 160 and 161 around perfectionism. So I just want to make that connection as well. And we talk about looking ahead and using the idea of the type of person you want to be remembered as, and the way that you want to be able to feel as you near the end of your life. I mention in this episode a blog post that was more transformative for me than I can really articulate into words. And this blog post talked about some of the things that people regret when they are coming to the end of their life. And it is things like not being completely who they are. Hiding pieces of themselves or trying to mold themselves into something that they think is more palatable or acceptable by other people. I'm sure we've all felt the pressures of doing that and have done that from time to time. I am absolutely guilty of that. Also, the regret that comes from not trying something. Very few of the people that this blog post talked about, these people who are at the end of their lives, very few of them regretted things that they did imperfectly. They just regretted the things that they didn't try. And I know for a fact, if you listen to my TEDx talk, I talk about this in that talk. I know for a fact that I went through a time in my life where I felt very constricted and I was not doing the things that I wanted to do. And it was that blog post and a lot of the conversations and self-reflection that I had around it that led to me giving up some of that fear around what other people would think. I also have this really funny anecdote around a woman that I met in Italy, who we will call Italian Bikini Lady. I talk about how she has become the pinnacle of who I think about when I think about the aging process and how comfortable I want to be in my own body and how much I want to accept my own body for what it is at that stage, rather than being upset that it doesn't conform to some ideal that I might have held earlier in my life or some way that it might have looked earlier in my life. Now, I just want to be very transparent and open with you. I am a woman who is 40 years old who has had two children. I struggle every day, and I think about every day, the transition that my body has gone through in the last, say, 5 years. 5 years ago, this actually just came up on my Facebook, whatever, when they send you little memories of things that happened to you in the past. 5 years ago, these very days, like it came up, I think, 2 days ago, I was competing in a powerlifting meet, and I was the leanest and strongest that I've ever been, and I don't look like that anymore, and my body doesn't function that way anymore for a variety of reasons, but two of them being I had two pregnancies in there. Your body looks different after that, and I do think about and work on every day the self-acceptance and self-compassion and self-love that comes with being in a body that's different now. And I'll do that throughout the rest of my life, right? We're going to get wrinkles. We're going to get gray hair. We're going to gain and lose and change and all of the things. We have a great conversation around that in this episode. So I just wanted to share that a little bit because it can be really easy in these things to, for me to put on my psychology hat, for me to put on my, how do I get to the root of explaining this concept hat and make it sound as though I have this all together. I don't. I'm working on the same things that you are. And so these episodes are just as impactful and valuable for me to hear as they are, hopefully, for you. So we have a great conversation about not so much about how you want to look as you get to the end of your life, but what kind of person do you want to be remembered as? What legacy do you want to leave? And how do you want to feel on your last day? This episode really gets to the crux of one of the biggest passions that I have. And this is one of the reasons why I mentioned Rich's review on iTunes, because he talked about how the guests on this show can help you live your best life. That is by far and away, bottom line, at its most simplistic, my biggest mission and joy in this world is helping people do that. Helping you keep your eye on the things that really matter, helping you move through those times that might be more difficult, equipping you with the mindset and the mental strength so that you can show up as your best version of yourself, your most fully expressed version of yourself, so that you fully experience your life. Because so many people don't have that opportunity, and we talk about a lot of that in this episode too. So if you're here for this episode, this one is a very deep one, but it is one that absolutely touches my heart in so many ways, and I hope it does the same for you as well. So I'm really excited for you to learn from and meet Stephanie Raffalock and get her just wisdom and her perspective as a woman who is absolutely thriving in the later chapters of her life. I can't wait for you guys to hear this interview, so let's get to that tape. Stephanie, I am absolutely thrilled that you are here today. We are going to be tackling a topic that I have never covered on the podcast before, and so I'm thrilled to dive in. So thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So you have an amazing perspective and amazing expertise in, as I mentioned, a topic that I've never tackled before, and that is what it means to move through our lives and move into the latter stages of our lives. You focus on how people can thrive and remain resilient and really enjoy life as they get older. Tell us a little bit about that work that you do and why it is you're so passionate about this in particular.
I've always been interested in women's issues, and for a large part, getting older is a woman's issue because we deal with the how do I look part of that, whereas men can thrive in an older part of life and they don't necessarily have that criteria in the space, so to speak. So I love listening to what other women have to say. A few years ago, I was writing a blog for a site called 60 and Me. And one of the cool things about writing a blog for someone else is you get like instant feedback. You know, people will say, well, I agreed with this, I didn't agree with that. But in this particular blog, what I was finding was that there was this whole group of like 60 plus women. I don't mean 60, the number, but the age 60 plus women who were trying to figure it out the same way I was. It's like, well, what do I do now? Because there's a lot of mythology and stereotyping, some of it toxic in the culture. So I began answering these women. I felt that I wanted to write about this. And very gradually, over a period of about 3 years, I really became an advocate and an activist for life isn't over till it's over. And don't buy into the, ooh, now I'm old, because old connotes a destination. Growing older is just a process. And human development is something that can happen psychologically and spiritually until the day we die. So that's why I'm passionate about it. I want to have people, especially women, like live your best life and don't put an end point on it. Live it till you're 80. Live it till you're 90. We all want to be that woman, not the woman that stops at 45 and suddenly says, I'm old.
I'm over here cheering. I'm like, what are we, like 30 seconds out of the gate? And I'm like, yeah, this is going to be good. I'm really excited about this. Before we hopped on to record, this is interesting because I had asked you if you had seen the Taylor Swift documentary on Netflix, because you're absolutely right. There is a thing around women and aging, right? Anti-aging. And it's not to say that men don't care, but if you had to bet $1 million on, as a gender, who cares more and who has more pressure, and you were going to either make another million or lose $1 million, you know where you'd put that bet, right? So anti-aging for women and Botox and being so careful to have this youthful appearance, and when you don't, we cover it up, and like all of those things. So this Netflix documentary with Taylor Swift, she is 30 in this documentary at the time of the taping, and she said, I'm very aware of the pressures of being a woman in the entertainment industry in particular, and that by age 35, I will be completely irrelevant. Isn't that amazing? Like by age 35, now the entertainment industry, I would say, is real life, but magnified. So that age of irrelevance in her mind is maybe a bit younger than it would be for the rest of us. But if we're all being honest, there's that point in our life where we would stamp ourselves as, yeah, that's old, and that brings with it stigma and a lot of shoulds and shouldn'ts and cans and can'ts that can constrain the way that we would live. And so what you were just saying about life isn't over until it's over and live it until that last day, I could just cheer. It makes me so happy.
Great. I'll take the cheering. Now, here's what's interesting about what she said. She said, no one is going to want me. I'm going to be irrelevant. I'm washed up at 35. And yet, this year, a real grown-up, mature woman, Renee Zellweger, won both the Golden Globe and the Oscar for Best Actress.
Amazing. Amazing.
She's not a starlet. In the last election cycle, 2018, more women over the age of 50 ran for local, state, and national office than ever before in history. And they got elected in droves. So first of all, it's like, now that's a myth. The whole thing, the significance, relevance thing, that's a myth. And I don't deny that there is an outside force. It comes to us through entertainment. It comes to us through Madison Avenue that underscores that, you know, lack of significance, lack of relevance, you know, being 50 or older isn't as sexy as it used to be. That being said, I think we each owe it to ourselves, if we get to that point of irrelevance or insignificance, to understand that a lot of that call is coming from inside the house. If we're going to make change in the culture, we have to dig into ourselves first and go, what is it that I thought made me relevant that now suddenly I think I'm not relevant?
Right.
What is it that made me feel significant that now suddenly I'm no longer significant? So that's the first thing. It's like, check out where that call is really coming from, because I don't think that the outside world owes me making me feel significant or making me feel relevant. But I owe it to myself to find out what that is in me.
That's huge. There's so much around. I've actually been talking to a lot of guests about this lately because it's such a big topic and it comes up in so many nuanced and veiled ways. And this is yet another one of those where we place our value as a human being. Now, what you would hope is that a person would see themselves as intrinsically valuable simply by being. The fact that you're here and you exist makes you valuable, right? And if you don't, if you're sort of rolling your eyes and saying, April, that's adorable. That's like a really great Instagram quote to say or whatever. Think about somebody, and when I say this, I'm gonna probably choke up saying it, but when I think about a very dear friend of mine from college who passed away, in the last couple of years from pancreatic cancer, when I think about her, she 100% would say, you are valuable because you are here and you have a life, right? So if you take that perspective and you look at this you know, the situation that you're in, the fact that you're just here as such an incredibly valuable gift, you can start to tease out, okay, well, where are the other places that if I agree that, yes, I'm going to be irrelevant at some point, where are those places that I'm placing value then? Then it's things like a youthful appearance and physical appearance. That's a huge part of it for women, if we're being honest. Placing our value as a human being on us being able to look good. Huge piece of it. And so much that goes with that.
Well, it's so interesting about, you know, your generation especially, and certainly my generation, has wanted to give the message to our daughters, our granddaughters, our sisters, our nieces, young women around us, that your worth is not contingent upon the size of your thighs or the size of your bank account, that your worth is not contingent upon whether or not you have wrinkles. The message that we give to those young women, to our daughters, is really the message we need to be giving to ourselves as we age. My worth is not contingent upon if I have wrinkles or not. My worth isn't contingent upon how I look. Now, that being said, I would like to say that I think that there is a period of grief that happens as one goes into older age. You realize that the life you've already lived is much longer than the life that you have left to live. Mm. So I think that it's fine to grieve. In fact, I think that grief is one of the great transformative forces of life. Love and loss, those are the two forces that really push us forward, that push us into being bigger, fuller, richer human beings. So that period of grief that happens at midlife is fine. Go ahead and grieve the fact that, you know, it's like, hey, I'm not going to look like a Madison Avenue or Instagram model anymore. Go ahead and grieve, you know, the athletic prowess that wanes a bit. But once you're done grieving that, put a stake in the ground. Claim that you are becoming a wise elder, that really is the gift of years, this last part of your life, that you've got an opportunity to be a light to yourself and a light to the world by how you live your life. And that has nothing to do with looks, and it has everything to do with attitude and the vision that you hold for yourself.
Mm, let's go there. Okay, so what you're talking about is, I think as we look at ourselves, when I think back to myself as a 20-year-old or in my 20s maybe, and just to put like the line in the sand for folks listening to this, if you don't know this, but I just turned 40. So that to just anchor me into the stage of life that I'm in, that's how old I am. So when I think back to when I was in my 20s, there was a lot of focus on physical appearance and focus on that being something, you know, you're kind of like out there peacocking a little bit and like dating a lot. And I mean, I think it's very natural at that stage of your life to focus on that. At some point though, you know, you reach a point in your life where you start to realize that there's more and that the things that you thought might make you happy, they're not the things that make you happy. And you start to get this deeper feeling. So what we're talking about is a sort of a transition point, right? It's like it's a turning of the Titanic in a new direction that you may not have gone before into what you're talking about, your purpose and your intention for the next chapter of your life. How do people make that transition? Or what does that transition look like? What characterizes it so that, you know, we can think about that as many of us are probably mid-transition or beginning that transition?
Well, I think the wake-up call for transition is grief. You know, you hit 40 and it's like, are you okay? Right? Or you hit 50 and you begin to feel older. And so there is that little moment of grief. And keeping in mind that that kind of grief dogs us our whole life. You know, there's a little bit of grief that comes with leaving childhood and becoming a teenager. Grief that comes with being a teenager and moving into college age or moving away from home. And so that happens at every stage. And grief is a transformative force that pushes us forward. So at midlife, I think that's the whisperer, that it's like, why am I feeling sad and I can't really hang it on anything? What am I grieving something? And I think that sorrow is something that we tend to push away when a lot of times we should be listening to what that sorrow is telling us. I read a book in my 30s that had a big, big influence on me. It was by a woman named Mae Sarton. It was called Journal of a Solitude. And I had never read a woman who wrote so rawly about, is that even a word, rawly? She wrote about her emotions in a way that was very raw and very authentic. And I remember she had this one line about anger, and she said, you need to be with your anger long enough for it to teach you something. And that is true of grief. You need to be with your sorrow long enough for it to teach you something. And I think it's perfectly fine to ask of your emotions, what is it that you're trying to show me here?
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's good.
We're never left without a North Star, really. It's just that I think sometimes we know how to talk to other people and maybe don't know how to talk with ourselves or to ourselves.
Mm-hmm. There was that's so profound that you have to be with these difficult emotions until they can teach you something. That's amazing. I did an interview recently with Steve Hayes. He's a psychologist and the founder of Acceptance and Commitment Therapy. It was such a wonderful interview. And in it, he hit on the same thing that you're hitting on, which is why I'm bringing it up. He hit on this notion of, like, imagine you had a piece of paper, right? And you were writing the experience that you're having with grief or with anger or whatever the difficult emotion is. You're writing it on this piece of paper in detail about how you're feeling. And if you look at that emotion and you think about flipping that piece of paper over and then asking the question of, if I feel this way, what does that mean that I care about? Like, if I'm able to be angered by that, what is that telling me that I care about or that I value or that I desire? What is that? And from there, you can start to drill in and go down a series of whys. Interesting. Okay, well, why do I want that? Or why do I care about that? Okay, interesting. Well, why is that important to me? And at some point, you'll get to that underlying, you know, foundational basement finding. And a lot of the time, what you get to is very basic human desires, like, because I want to feel valued as a person, because I want to feel like I belong with people, basic things like that. And what's cool is once you know that, like, okay, great, I want to feel valuable as a person. Well, maybe the direction that I was going in order to feel valued as, like, some skinny, hot Instagram model, maybe that's not the direction I can achieve this anymore. But if I want to feel valued, then now in my position, how do I do that? Like, where do I find my value as a person? Maybe it's in service. Maybe it's in helping other people. Maybe it's in creating something new and beautiful if you're artistic in that way or creative. Whatever that happens to be, I don't care. But you can get to that foundational, just bottom line desire of yours and then build up from there. And so he spoke about the exact same thing around these difficult emotions. Don't push them away. Let them in and let's sit with them. Yes, I love that.
Yeah, they're touchstones. So I think that that's how we move forward. And it's like the life goal is to move forward with greater and greater experiences that we can give ourselves to, right? It's like, I know that we are meaning-seeking creatures, but I was listening to a Joseph Campbell thing not that long ago, and Joseph Campbell said, it's not really about the meaning for us. That's not what we're going for. What we're going for is the rapture of the experience.
So
emotions are the doorway into the rapture of the experience, which is why as we get older, we don't want to shut that part of ourselves off. And one of the ways you shut that part of yourself off is by claiming that it's like, well, now I'm old. Well, now I'm not significant. Who's going to want me? You want to go for an experience that says, wow, what a ride. And, you know, you mentioned a friend earlier that had had died in her, what, 30s? Pancreatic cancer. Mm-hmm. So, you know, at this stage of life, and I'm going to be 68 in a couple of months, I think that it's a privilege to have lived this long. a lot of my friends didn't make it. So I think of them.
Yeah, I agree. If this is one of your first episodes with me, you might not know this about my background, but I lost my dad to cancer when I was 11, and I've spoken, I did a TEDx talk where I spoke in depth about this, and I've done some writing on it and that type of thing, where at some point you reach a point in your adulthood where you start to think about, wow, what must that position, you know, at first you think about it from the position of a child who lost their parent, and you're very egocentric naturally in your own grief and your own experience. But as I've gotten older, I've been able to think about, wow, how must he have felt? He had cancer when he was 40 years old, when he was my age, and he had two young kids, me being one of them and my brother. I also have two young kids, and I think about, wow, what must the perspective that he went through, what must that have been like, and what were the fears and the sadness that he must have felt? Oh my gosh, how lucky I am right now. And that's not to say, I want people to understand the nuance here. Like, it is an amazing gift and it is an incredible thing, but that doesn't mean that you're not going to have moments where, you know, you're sad that you've closed a chapter in your life, or you're sad that, you know, you maybe you look differently. Like, anybody who's gone through a pregnancy knows what it's like to have their body morph and change and then change sort of back and then different again and whatever, and how just weird and unnerving that can be. That's not to say that every minute you have to be pretending like everything's okay, otherwise you're ungrateful. But more like, to me, the way that I like to think about it is the through line, the thing that I go back to each time is, yep, this is difficult, but there are alternatives that would be even more so, or there are alternatives that I would rather not be in, and I would pick this over them. So right. It's more of a through line. Yeah. Yeah.
Love and loss. I mean, it's like, without loss, we don't know how powerful love in our life can be. And without love, the loss is unbearable. So they're gonna always ride us in tandem. Those experiences that texture our heart to a greater compassion ride side by side throughout our life. And one of the things that excites me about growing older is that the journey, the psychological, spiritual journey, is ongoing. It doesn't have to end. So why not dig around in it and find the gems that are there, and then encourage the people around you, the women that will come after you.
Mm, I love that. And that's exactly what you're doing right now. I mean, that is the exact audience you're talking to right now. I want to talk a little bit about a very, very nasty word. It's a really dangerous word, but this word of should, and its partner shouldn't. You know, there's all these ideas that we give very strong messages a lot of the time about what someone of our age should or shouldn't be doing. And there's a woman that I think about who always makes me smile whenever I'm in a position where that word comes up. I think about her. I was on vacation in Croatia years back, and we randomly popped over to Italy. We were like right on the border. So we popped over to Italy for lunch one day. We parked our car. We got into this funky situation where I ended up having to push our car out of this parking spot. Long story, really hysterical. I'll tell it someday. But anyway, I'm pushing our car out of this parking spot, but I was having a tough time. And my husband, for whatever reason, he's steering and I'm pushing. We'd had this all backwards. But a woman ran off the beach. So we were parked right next to a beach. A woman who was probably in her 60s ran off, saw me and was like, oh my God, this woman needs help. And so she ran off the beach to come and push the car with me. And it's this woman in her 60s wearing a bikini at the beach in her 60-year-old body, right? Could not have given less of a care about the fact that this is just her bathing suit. I don't care. This is just what my body looks like. I don't care. You need my help. I'm going to come help. It was like the most matter of fact, amazing experience, because here's this woman who's coming to help me, who's wearing what she, quote, shouldn't wear. In the U.S., she would probably get comments and side glances and whatever. And it was just such a non-issue for her. And I always think about that woman. Like, you never know when you're going to have a profound impact on someone by such a small gesture. She did. And I'm like, I will be 60 years old wearing my bikini in my body that looks like it does after I've had two children. This is just what I will do. Because that woman, she did what you're not supposed to do. And she was like this trailblazer for me. So tell me a little bit about your thoughts about that dirty word, the should and the shouldn't, because you've got such a profound view of what the meaning of this second act of our life can look like. And that word, I think, gets in people's way from achieving what you're talking about.
Yeah. I mean, first of all, let me say everything about that story was like so Italian. I mean, it was. It's like, I love it. She's in a bikini.
So wonderful. Like,
God, I love that. Okay, the should word. It goes hand in hand with another SH word, shame.
Very much
you
so.
You should be doing this. Well, there's like a little agenda there, isn't there? And it's the shame word. And I think that that's what underneath all the stuff about relevance and significance and how many wrinkles and stuff is this idea of shame. Are you ashamed to grow older? Are you ashamed to be 40? Are you ashamed to be 50? That's not the rapture of the experience that I want. So mm-hmm. I think that we have to dig around and say, you know, what is it? Where is it that I feel shame with this? And is it really necessary? Now, obviously, the Italian woman in the bikini didn't feel shame. It's like, this is my body. I've lived this long. I'm on the beach. You need help. Hey, no problem. That was it. Mm-hmm. And she wasn't, you didn't shame her. You were like inspired by her.
Right.
So we worry so much about the should and should not. And really what's just under the surface of that should and should not is shame.
And the audacity in some cases, the way that it feels is the audacity that you don't feel shame. I can't believe
yes.
what you hear, you know, when you hear sort of pushback, you know, a woman who looks like her, whatever, wearing that bikini. Oh my gosh. Bleh. And she was not like, you know, a 60-year-old bikini model who's, you know, maybe been airbrushed to look pretty. She was just like a lady, like a normal lady, right?
Right.
And it's almost like the audacity, the rules that we get put in place to stay in line and do what we're supposed to do. It's this audacity that how could you do, like, how dare you not feel shame? How dare you go do that in spite of the fact that you have that dimple, you have that wrinkle, you have that bulge right there, you have that, you know, curve, you are missing this other curve, you know, whatever it happens to be. How dare you not feel shame? You're absolutely right. That is right under the surface there.
Yeah.
Oh, man. How do we get people over that? Like, how do people start to move past that? Because that impacts you. I don't care if you're 20 years old, 30 right. years old, the rules change, right? Like the rules change about what you should or shouldn't do, can or can't do as a woman of your insert age here. The rules change, but that same feeling is what keeps us in line. How do we change that?
I think that cultural change takes a long time. Personal change can happen more quickly, although one hopes that you change and reinvent yourself your entire life. But cultural change comes about as all from all those people making personal change. And we've seen that if you look back to the beginnings of feminism with just the suffragettes marching to have the vote, we've come a long way from that vote mm-hmm. to the hashtag MeToo movement, which was also an area of shame. Women kept those things secret. Mm-hmm. So that cultural shift is something that's going to take 40, 50 years. And I can do as much as I can do in my lifetime, and you will do as much as you can do in your lifetime. I think part of it is that we support other women. And by support other women, I don't mean just like, let's go have a martini and they're there. I mean, support other women with, let's not be afraid to educate each other. Mm. Why do you want to do that to yourself, to think that you should be this or you should be that? What's preventing you from like loving yourself more fully, accepting yourself the way you are? That's something that we can do for each other. That's what real support and encouragement is for me. I love you just the way you are. I'm not going to judge you if you're 20 pounds overweight or 100 pounds overweight. Mm-hmm. I don't care. So I think it's part personal and part cultural for those shifts to happen. And they take the time we take, but every single step counts. When I think of the women in my life, and I sometimes do this as just a visualization for myself, I think about the women standing behind me. I think about my great-great-grandmother Eva, who came over here on a boat from Poland with her family and raised 9 children. And she didn't have the opportunity of education. And then I think about my grandmother Julia, who was one of her daughters, who also didn't really have the opportunity of education, though she managed to get through the 3rd grade. Mm. And she became a voracious reader as a result of it. So I grew up not even thinking about her education because she always had a book going on. And then I think about my mother, who came of age at a time when the family really thought it was best if she dropped out of school and helped with the farm because the depression was going on. So I was the first woman in my family to graduate from college. And, you know, it's kind of gets baked in the cake DNA. I had a really rough time going that route and getting myself through school and getting myself through college because there was no modeling of that for me. But every step of the way, my great-great-grandmother Eva that I see in my mind's eye, and my grandmother Julia and my mother, these women took steps for me. They sort of loved me into life for the steps that they took for me. And so it's good to remember our ancestors. And, you know, it's funny. We would never judge our mothers, I hope, the way that we judge ourselves.
Right.
I would never have said to my mother, oh, gosh, your hair, you know, it's all white. It should be, you know, you should dye it.
Right.
I would never say that to her. What I remember about my mother is I remember her eyes and I remember her wicked, wicked sense of humor.
Mm. That's amazing. And what's interesting about it is that judgment of other people that we've been talking about for a bit, the more we do that, right? The more we either outwardly or probably more likely inwardly, you have sort of a knee-jerk reaction like, oh, she shouldn't be doing that, or I can't believe she, or whatever that happens to be. The more we do that, the more that we reinforce that boundary or reinforce that quote-unquote rule for ourselves because we're saying it's legitimate. So the more times we do that, and I think what I loved about what you just said is supporting other women. I think that should be our challenge from this episode, to say, make an intention to be that woman who is going to support the other women around her, who's going to assume that in each of those situations, they're doing their best. And if they're showing up not that great, it probably means that there's something pushing them. There's a pressure there that's causing them to either behave or be in that mood, whatever it happens to be. But be that woman who is going to assume everyone's doing their best and is, you know, living their best life, wearing whatever they're wearing, being however they're being. And when you catch yourself internally, because it'll happen, right? We're all human. It just, sure, it happens. When you catch yourself having those thoughts of, I can't believe she, or why would she, commit to exploring those thoughts in the way that you and I have talked about in this episode. Like, commit to saying, why do I care about that? What rule am I asking her to follow? Well, where did that rule come from? Well, why do I think she has to do that? Because that'll tear down those boundaries for yourself too. You're going to end up feeling much more confident in your own skin, I believe.
Absolutely. And you are an uplifter. That's who I want to be in the world, is I want to be an uplifter. I want to be a light to the women around me. And like you said, you set an intent. You create a vision. You know, we create a vision for each decade of our lives. The vision in our 20s is a little more shallow than others, but it's appropriate for that time of life. In our 30s, it changes a bit. In our 40s, it changes a bit more. You get to this stage of life. When I say this stage of life, I mean my stage of life, which is the last third of my life. And I'm less about goals and ambition than I am about what kind of person do I want to be? Mm-hmm. If I've only got 20 or 25 years left to live my life, what kind of person do I want to be? I want to be an uplifter. I would like to walk through the day with kindness. I say a little prayer every morning for myself about dragon heart. I like symbols. And I love the symbol of the dragon because it's fierce. It's focused. And so I want to be fierce with my love. I want to be focused on my love, that's how I get through the day. So I say a little prayer every morning when I'm standing in the kitchen waiting for my tea water to boil, that I live with a dragon heart, which means I live with a heart that's open to kindness and love, both giving and receiving. And that's the kind of vision that I hold for this third of my life. But I think that as we mature, and that really means to me midlife and beyond, we should be looking at the vision of not just what you want to do, but who do you want to be? Mm-hmm. How do I want to be in the world? I want to be an uplifter. You want to be an uplifter. And on it goes.
And it makes me think a lot about, there was this amazing blog post. It's funny, you know, you write something and you never know when something that you've written or whatever, someone writes something, they never know when that is going to be life changing for someone. There's this blog post by a woman named, I believe it's Bronnie Ware, and it's she was an end of life care nurse, so people who are on hospice care at the end of their life. And she spoke with a lot of her patients about, these are people who were potentially dying within days of the conversations she had with them. And she asked them about things that they regret. And so this blog post, you can Google it, it's called The Regrets of the Dying. And there are very fundamental things, and it is things like, I didn't allow myself to be happy. I let the should and the shame creep in too much. I didn't live out as an expression of who I truly am. I tried to play to the person that society thought I should be. And no one regrets the things that they failed, like tried at and failed or didn't do perfectly. Not a single person she talked to regretted that. They all regretted the stuff that they didn't try because of some of those other rules. And that blog post was the biggest punch in the face to me, because I thought about, again, my dad and all of the things at the time of my life that I was in. It was probably one of the most boxed in, constricted times of my life. And I thought about all the things that I wanted to do that I wasn't doing because I was afraid that people would judge me for not doing it perfectly. And I'm like, what are you, and this is the long-winded point that I'm getting to, is what are you risking? What you're risking is, because every single one of us are going to be that person, right? Who has days, hours, minutes to live. Every one of us. And this is like the bottom line of what absolutely drives me for this work. Every one of us is going to be in that position, but the steps that you take today gets to decide what feelings and thoughts you're going to have. What are you going to regret, if anything? Like, are you going to regret that you didn't try something? Do it now then. That regret is going to be because there's no time left and you can't fix it. Like, I think about that April, days, minutes, hours before she dies, I think about her on a more than, like, I'm choking up. I think about her on a more than daily basis because I want her to be, I owe it to her, you know? And so I just urge people to think about that. It's such a difficult topic and it's painful, but it's one of those things like, man, sit with it. The more you do, the less you will care about a lot of these other things. I'm sorry, I cut you off. Keep going, because now I'm crying over here.
No, you didn't cut me off. I appreciate the emotion and the vulnerability that you bring to that statement, because at the end of the day, that really does come, it does come down to that. Do you want to love more? Are there things that you didn't try? Are there things that you gave up too soon? That's the stuff of life and living that is more important than whether or not you make the rules, whether or not you do the shoulds and should nots. It's the stuff that, you know, can you reach that point that this is the end of my life? This is my death. Mm-hmm. Will it be the fruition of my life, or will it just be the process of, will it just be the decay, the process of decay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I want my death to be the fruition of my life. That, you know, there's an adage that says we die the way that we live. Mm. So if you live with love in your heart, chances are you will die with love in your heart.
I love that.
If you live knowing that, you know what, I really did do my best, then you will die with that in your heart. So that's the good stuff to hang on to. And I really think that, you know, you do such a valuable service to have this kind of podcast and put out this kind of information, that in midlife, women are coming into their own. You know, put a stake in the ground, claim your truth and live it, and support the other women around you while you do it. That's the good stuff.
That is beautiful. I want to, as we're wrapping up today, actually, before we go there, I also want to highlight something that you said around, and think about the person that you want to be remembered as. Like, who is that person that you want to be? Because people don't, to your point about your mom. I don't know if my mom had like a six pack when I was younger or not. I don't remember when she got wrinkles. I mean, she's in her 60s now, so she has them. I don't know when she got them. I have no idea. I don't remember if my mom was the most well-dressed mom or not. I mean, we didn't have a ton of money, so probably not. But that's not what sticks in my head, right? That isn't it at all. So the type of person that you want to be remembered as. I didn't want that to go without
highlighted. That's a great reminder.
That's wonderful. So as we're wrapping up today, with all of this in mind, what does psychological strength in the context of how we think about this experience of life, what does that mean to you?
Well, it means resiliency. And that's the bounce back factor. And we all have a lot more bounce back factor than we think we do. It means that we have a bounce back, that if we fail at something, if we make a mistake about something, that you can bounce back. So resilience, and the fact that life is made up of second chances and reinvention. You're not stuck. If you screw up and you screw up bad, you get another chance. Life is about second chances. So there's that. There's the vision, to keep vision in mind for yourself as for psychological sake of psychological strength. And then there's vulnerability and sorrow and grief, those things that we like to push away that really make up the courage of the heroine's journey. You're not a hero in your own story until you've experienced all those things and continue to experience them with an open heart and with open arms. It's like, I understand sorrow. I understand that all people feel sorrow. All people suffer. And you don't have to scratch the surface of life too deeply to see that. So if that is what is so, then let us give ourselves to the greater experience of what the vulnerability teaches us, how vulnerability really is about courage, how failure really is about courage, and that courage doesn't look like the wristbands and the breastplate in Wonder Woman. Courage looks like baby barf on your shoulder and skin knees.
That's beautiful.
So that's what I think. That's what I think about psychological strength. And I would say that that is also a point of spiritual strength. Because once you understand that, you might stop asking, oh God, why me?
Oh, absolutely. I love that. Courage doesn't always look like Wonder Woman. It looks like baby barf on your shoulder and a skin knee.
Every mother out there knows what I just said.
I changed my shirt this morning because I don't know whose breakfast it was, but it was someone's and not mine that was on my shoulder. Oh, I love this. Your work and your message is so wonderful. And it is just a breath of fresh air. I feel like you, in our respective stages of life, you're like another woman in addition to Italian bikini lady whose name I did not get and probably wouldn't have known because she spoke Italian. But anyway, you and Italian bikini lady are like
the I love being image- in her company.
You were the images of these women that I like to think about, you know, in the same way as you, is who went before me, but also like who is pulling me? Like who is the woman, like the people that I'm going to focus on that are the pull? And you, an Italian bikini lady, are those women. And I just think it's so wonderful and I'm so appreciative. If people want to learn more about you and about your work and this message and everything underneath it, where can we find more about you?
You can find my website at stephanieraffalock.com. My podcast, wherever you get your podcast, is Coffee Table Wisdom, and it is all about positive aging. And in April of this year, I am releasing a book called A Delightful Little Book on Aging through She Writes Press, which is available for pre-order now on Amazon, IndieBound, bookshop.org, and soon to be in bookstores.
Wonderful. We'll link up all of those things on your show notes page. So folks listening to this, you should be able to just scroll down on this episode, get links to all of that goodness, and really dive deeper in with Stephanie in all of those capacities. This has just been so wonderful. We hit on so many of the topics that I'm so passionate about, and the real underlying reason why this work drives me so much, bottom line, is so that people can experience life more vividly, more aligned, feel more free to be who they are. And I adore that your work is doing the same thing and shedding light on, you know, the journey that we're all taking and the direction that we're all going to go. And so we get a choice as to what those years are going to be like. And I love that you're urging people to choose a life of experience and vibrancy versus just letting themselves sort of dim out. So thank you so much for being here. This has been such a wonderful conversation and I so appreciate it.
April, I love your passion. I love what you're giving to the world. It's been an honor to sit in your presence today. Thanks for having me.
It's a simple fact that nearly everyone in the world could benefit from building psychological strength, but not everyone will put in the time and effort to do so. But today you did. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Building Psychological Strength. Now, if you're interested in building the mental toughness, confidence, and resilience you need to thrive through life's ups and downs, visit us at www.peakmindpsychology.com. Also, if there's someone in your life who could benefit from this episode, please share it with them. And if you yourself found this episode valuable, meaning if you took away even one insight that you can use to build psychological strength in your own life, we would so appreciate it if you would drop us a rating and a review on iTunes. The thing is, the more ratings and reviews we have, the easier it is to get this powerful and important content out to the people who need to hear it. Remember, your mind can be your most valuable asset or your biggest liability, and you get to choose. So choose wisely, my friend, and I'll see you next time on Building Psychological Strength.
Baseball fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win a prize every day during the baseball season. Step into the batter's box for BetMGM's Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. Pick any area of the strike zone and take your best swing. If you get a single, double, triple, or home run, you'll receive a prize. Smash a home run to collect a bonus bet on us. Just log into your BetMGM sports account to get started. Then visit your promotion section to access the Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. You'll score a prize if you hit a single, double, triple, or home run. There's nothing more exciting than going yard, so swing for the fences with the king of sportsbooks. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary depending on the market and expire 24 hours from issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.